keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Yes, so we're back here. It's Wednesday night. It's Radio General. It's also the loverugbyleague.com podcast. It is, of course, the Final Hooter, where we look at the rugby league scene. I'm Dave Parkinson. I'm joined ably by Dave Birch this evening. And Dave, what a week we've seen in rugby league.
Yeah, it's been very, very interesting. What you say, we've seen, probably the big talking point is what we haven't seen this weekend, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, well, I know what I saw on Saturday, and it was a very good performance from Siddle.
Right.
Who got through to the National Conference League final at Widnes, strangely enough. The Conference Challenge Cup final was played at Widnes a few weeks ago. That involved Lee Miners. It was a chance for Lee Miners to go and spark and take a step closer to winning their own treble. And it was Siddle, the men from Yorkshire, the men from Halifax, that spoiled the party. They won by 34 points to 14. Very deserved victory as well. I thought they played some excellent stuff. There was also another big event happening in Lee. I could just talk Lee all night.
Carry on.
Which was also...
Was it a lobby contest, was it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. I wasn't invited. Maybe because they knew I'd win it. Maybe that's what it was. But it was also a playoff final between Lee East in Division 2 of the Conference League, taking on Huddersfield Underbank. And Underbank won with the last try 30 seconds from the end.
Oh, heartbreaking
stuff.
How
galling's that? And then there was another big event as well. There's loads of cars knocking around. I don't know what was happening.
All right, it must have been that England match against France. That's a favourite waste of time, as you've just mentioned.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. we did play a song there. I know that we can't play it on the podcast, which is just a shame because I love that song for starters. But, we played Owen Paul, favourite waste of time. And basically, it was a waste of time for England, wasn't it? 84-4, nobody learns anything.
Not really, no. I mean, you know, you can get all the togetherness in the camp and, you know, it's good for them to be together and it's good for them to throw the ball about, score some tries. But... you know, what did they get? Did they get match toughness, you know, which they will certainly get against the New Zealand team in this three-match series? Or, as you said, you know, did they really, was it just, you know, a bit of an afternoon out just to blow a few cobwebs away? So I'm not sure if Steve McNerow will be pleased. He'll be pleased with the score and the amount of tries that they scored, but, you know, I think personally that maybe New Zealand had the tougher game at the weekend by taking on Leeds Rhinos.
Now, despite the Rugby League not really telling anybody but the public of Lee that there was an international Rugby League event happening, they had nearly 8,500 there, so that's quite a good attendance. Okay, it's been dwarfed by some of the attendances in the dark side of Rugby's World Cup, which ensured that there was no coverage of the game anywhere. I'm talking even match reports. So the only match reports that I saw of this game were in the League Express, like you'd expect to be reading the League Weekly. And I think I read a couple of paragraphs in things like the Daily Mirror. So, you know, I've just given up where I read.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing. I mean, you know, as a rugby league fan myself, I couldn't get down to Lee on the afternoon. But, you know, I had to follow the game on Twitter, you know, and it's a bit disappointing, really, that, you know, even though maybe Sky Sports didn't want to pick that one up, you know, why did the BBC not do it? You know, especially seeing as ITV had the dark side, as we put it, you know, it just would have been something to go up against it, you know, and just, you know, and I'm sure they would have got plenty of, you know, viewing public. Everyone wants to watch England, even if it was, you know, one-sided, but, you know, just to get them sort of stoked for this series that's coming up against New Zealand.
England led 32 points to 4 at half-time. France did get on the board after 12 minutes with Arnaud, but by that time, Bateman had scored 2 tries, Hodgson had scored a try, and even Farrell was getting in on the act. And as I mentioned, by half-time, 32 points to 4. So in total, there was plenty of tries scored. Bateman scored a debut hat-trick, and he's had a wow of a second half of the season, hasn't he, for Wigan, playing in an unaccustomed centre position.
To be fair, you say an unaccustomed centre position. You go as far as saying that could be his position for years to come, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's picked there this week. And I'm usually one for saying, please don't play players out of position, but he's been that good for Wigan in their run to the grand final. You know, he's got to be a shoo-in, I think.
There was a lot made about Steve McNamara also picking Widdop and Williams at half-back. Both of them have been regular sixes at their club this season. So somebody's got to take on a slightly different role there. Do you see it as much of a problem these days in the modern era?
No, a lot of the time the six and seven seem to swap over, and, you know, what one-year players who were predominantly a scrum half end up at six, and the opposite way around. So I don't think it's as you know, as important as it was many sort of years ago. You know, a lot of the players interchange, even during the, you know, actually during the game. You normally see a fullback at loose forward during a scrum.
You do.
You know, that's one of the things. So, yeah, it swaps off. But I think if the players are good enough, I'm sure Gareth Widdop and, again, George Williams has been outstanding this year for the Wigan Warriors. I'm sure that won't be a problem. It's the big one for me is the big call at the weekend, obviously, the fullback position. You've got the reigning man of steel, Zach Hardacre, being very pivotal in Leeds' treble winning side. Or you've got Sam Tompkins, who's had a bit of an injury hit season, not had the best of form over in New Zealand. Who are you going to pick? Now, obviously, myself personally, I go with the man on form. Got to go for Hardacre. But is he going to maybe say, well, let's put Hardacre into the centre? That may push Bateman out. And then you start playing a lot of players out of position and your backs are all a bit up in the air, but hopefully Steve McNamara won't do that, and next week's show won't be all about what mistakes he's made. It'll be all about how well his team had played, and of course the good victory that we're all hoping for this week in Hull.
I'll tell you what, Dave, as well, sort of looking at it, surely he can't move Hardacre. He's been on fire, and I know it doesn't sound, you know, too good to have two panellists agreeing with one another, because usually when Adrian's sat in the seat, whatever he says, I just disagree. But I'm actually in full agreement with you there, Dave. I think that, you know, Hardacre has been in wonderful form this season. I think he deservedly takes out that Man of Steel award. And, you know, he's a very smart cookie. His defence was always a good part of his game. His attacking prowess, though, from the fullback position this season has come on in leaps and bounds. And for me, he is that key player in an England backline. I think he's that important.
It is. I mean, the one thing for me which I think would be good is, you know, if you could put, say, Sam Tompkins on the bench, Sam's probably a little bit more versatile than Zach Hardacre would be. And, you know, and Sam could even go in the halves if need be. But I wouldn't start him there, you know. But if, you know, there was an injury, say, to, you know, Williams or Widdop, you could possibly put Sam in there. You know, have him on the bench as a utility player, you know, because he could probably play anywhere along that back line. And, you know, obviously, on his day, he's also a handful as well. You know, we haven't seen much of him for the last 2 years because he's been on the other side of the country. But I'm sure next year for the Warriors, he'll be back to his best, should we say.
He's swapped one set of Warriors for another, really, hasn't he?
Well, sorry, it's easier that.
Doing.
Yeah, it's easy that way.
You only need Tippex on your contract then, don't you? That's where it is.
We just put Warriors on everything, just get, you know, that's it.
Other scorers were Josh Hodgson, Farrell, Ryan Hall grabbed two tries. Burgess scored a try. Ferris scored three. Now, I know Ferris divides opinion. Where do you stand on him?
As long as he's playing in the pack and not in the hooker position, I'm quite happy with Brett Ferris.
He's always been a player that I rate, I think. He's
I always put him at the side like a Ben Westwood where, you know, maybe not now. You know, I know Benny's in the squad for this, you know, this test series, but, you know, he is, he's 100%er, and you know what you're going to get. He's a good tackler, good attacker, got a little bit of a nasty streak to him as well. But I just think maybe he's one of, again, you know, previously he was put at hooker as a replacement hooker in the last sort of series that they had. And
to be fair, it's been that long since we've had a series we've not seen an England side in years.
Yeah, and when you put someone out of position and then they don't play very well, you know, and then they get criticism, and it's a bit of a shame, really. You know, when it's all down to the coach, you should be getting criticised rather than the actual player. So I think if Brett Ferris is playing in his normal position that he plays for Huddersfield week in, week out, then yeah. But, you know, we have got a lot of good stars in that England team, and I fully expect us to win this series. There you go, that's a bold prediction for
it
you.
It is a bold prediction, yeah. I was going to come on to that. We've got nothing to talk about now for the second half of the show. Now you've let that one out in the
all
back
right,
there.
I'll see you later.
There was another interesting call from Steve McNamara, I noticed, within the lineup, in the fact that he started with Josh Hodgson. Obviously, he'll have seen a lot of him because he's been playing his club rugby over in Australia in the NRL for Canberra Raiders this year. Going quite well, by all accounts, too. But then he's got Roby sitting on the bench. Now, for me, I would have swapped those two about. Roby, for me, would always be a starting hooker because he's one of these guys that I think Josh Hodgson is more of an impact sort of player. He's the one that you throw on to speed everything up. And it's like the rapier and the broadsword, really. And Roby's the broadsword to soften everything up.
I just had James Roby on for 80 minutes. Simple as.
Well, yeah, he's an excellent
player. If he could, you know, if he could do, you know, when... but yeah, that, you know, if you're going to have two great hookers, the big call probably was Michael McAlorin not being picked. You know, again, I thought he's you know, been pivotal in what Wigan have done at the end of this season. Sorry, I know you're not a big fan.
I have to admit, with McAlorin, it's not that I'm not a big fan. I don't think he does enough ball in hand. He's a fantastic defender, but then again, so was Malcolm Olka when he was at Salford. Do you just want to? A number nine that's just going to tackle all day, or do you want someone that's going to offer you a little bit ball in hand as well? Because Roby does a lot, doesn't he?
He does, and you know, when he plays well for Saints play well. It's simple as, and if you can get James Roby on that field, as you said, as a starter, he can put the groundwork in, and then when you're 20 points ahead, you can bring Hodgson on to cause even more mayhem.
But they went the other way about at the weekend, because Roby ends up going on, scores two tries in what, 5 minutes? So yeah, you know, that's not bad.
I mean, you may be lead a little bit into that as well. Maybe that wasn't anything to do with team selection. Maybe it's just the fact of giving Hodgson a bit of a run out. You know, he would have played, probably not played as much as James Roby this season, and James Roby obviously would have played only up till a couple of weeks back, with Saints being in the semi-final. Hodgson, I think, would have finished his season by then. So maybe he just wanted to give him minutes more than anything too tactical. Maybe we're reading a little bit too much into that.
And there was also 12 goals from Gareth Widdop. So we always knew he was a fair goal kicker anyway, but nice of him to get a bit of practice in.
Well, yeah, that's the good thing, isn't it? But again, there's players out there who can kick goals for England as well. So Sam can do that as well, can't he?
From a French point of view, though, should they have even been asked to take part in this international? I mean, they're in the middle of a European Championship, for goodness sake. It's just devalued that entire competition.
It is, and, you know, the thing is, as well, with it being in the middle of that, you know, they're going to be playing this week coming, and they've just been on the end of a big hiding, 84 points to 4. So that can't be doing their confidence much good. Whereas if they'd have been playing at their level, as we see it, by playing, you know, Scotland, you know, Ireland, Wales, you know, it was a bit difficult. But who else could England have played, really? You know, that's the only other question. Obviously, we've been through the sort of the mid-season test matches. Where we picked the all golds, you know, the best of the foreigners. But again, a lot of players have finished their season, they're having operations. You know, if you tried to get an all golds team out of this, you know, at this time of the year, it probably would have been a little bit difficult. People go home on the holidays, you know, and what have you. And some of them, of course, are playing for New Zealand.
You'd be left asking Ali Laurititi to back up, wouldn't you? Because he played a starring role for Leeds on
Friday. Just
put
Morley in again, give Morley another game. He could have played for the All Golds as well.
He'll have more retirement dues than I don't know what. In fact, I've known work colleagues of less retirement dues than what Adrian Morley's had.
Yeah, well, he's still in Rice. Has he actually officially retired now? Is he still getting anything else?
I don't know. Anyway, you've heard what we had to say all about the international, but what about the men who are behind it? Let's hear first of all from Richard Agar, the French coach, and this is what he told Steve Banning.
Well, Richard Agar, the France head coach, your reaction to a record defeat by England today?
Yeah, tough one, but I can't say it's one that you know, I'm surprised. It's an ugly scoreline. I think we've come into this game. I think when the fixture were announced, it's one that the French can look forward to. We've gone into this game without something like 14 players, and I just think the score is reflective of the respective depth, the playing depth of both countries. You know, we've ended up today having probably six or seven guys that basically are part-time footballers, and I think coming up again, a powerful England side like that, it were always going to be a very, very difficult afternoon. You know, like I say, the scoreline's ugly, but, you know, the reality for us is, you know, we've gone in there with a very, very weak and inexperienced team in terms of test caps, Super League experience, and the big difference between the sides were obviously physical. You know, we simply could not match England physically at all.
But on hindsight, it's a bit of a bump because obviously last week you got off to a great start to the European Championship.
Yeah, but it's a different level of competition. So as I say, if we were coming into this game with, you know, Bosquia, Dupont, Casti, Pelissier, Battiri, Garcia, you know, we'd have been far more confident of holding his gloves up and putting a game as it was. You know, we lost three players from last week. We've gone into this game with a lot of guys making the first or second start, and you know, a very, very young and inexperienced team. So I think it was just, you know, quite clearly a mismatch. I'm not too sure either side would get anything out of it. And I also think that, you know, had we had a crystal ball and realised we were going to be in this position at this time of the year, perhaps it's not a fixture that we would look to have stuck his hand up to play.
So there you go, Richard Acar. If he had a crystal ball, he wouldn't have stuck his hand up to play this game.
Probably right as well. Probably, as you said, for the same reasons that we mentioned before, reference are in the middle of a tournament. France are at a level where, you know, they can compete with Wales, Scotland, Ireland, and that's a good little tournament. And it builds them as well. It, you know, helps their confidence. And playing anybody and getting beat by 84 points isn't going to do anyone any good, really.
He alluded to it in the interview there, but I mean, his squad was shorn of a lot of the French Catalan players, which obviously they're used to playing at a higher intensity of rugby league in Super League. He's ended up naming maybe half a dozen fairly new caps and players who are part-time now, as we've seen when part-time teams have come against full-time teams in cup competitions, the result is usually emphatic in favour of the full-time team.
It is, and you know, the class does tell. You know that England team was very strong. I mean, there were still some big names missing from that team, but the England team was very, very strong, and it was difficult. And maybe, and I know it's not good for England, and they wanted to play over here and in front of the English fans. Mm. But I think if they maybe played that game over in France, maybe more Catalan players may have turned up for that one. Richard Agar may have got a better, you know, group of players to play because it was England and it's in France.
Well, he gave a strange statement as well. I remember reading that they'd virtually been banned from warming up at Catalan's Dragons, which is just a bizarre situation. It's the French national side. Where are they supposed to do the training?
I know, it's a strange one.
Quite right, is there?
Yeah, it's a strange one because Catalan class themselves as a separate entity in a separate region. That's just, you know, that's something the Catalans do. It's the same on the Spanish side as well.
Well, yeah, I suppose they do have half the team of Australians.
You know, yeah, you know, and it's a difficult one because the question you're asking is who could England have played that would have given them a decent enough run?
I know.
Go on.
England Knights.
Possibly.
We seem to have put the Knights out to pasture for a while. You know, they last played before the World Cup in 2013. They took on Samoa in a warm-up game that I think myself and Adrian actually covered for Radio General.
Oh, right.
We did. We were there at Salford on an afternoon where England actually lost to Italy.
Oh, right, yeah, I remember.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, James Solenstall was on the wing for Italy.
Yeah,
wasn't he?
That's right. And he's had a brilliant season, by the way, for Halifax. But yeah, when you've got a team there and you've got a lot of promising players, I mean, we keep being told that, you know, Super League is producing, you know, much, much better and in higher quantities of numbers young players. Mm. They should be given a platform to perform at if they don't believe that they're quite up to that international standard at the moment.
Good shout. Very good shout.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, good shout. But England playing England? It's a bit strange, that, isn't it?
They could also have gone, because they had a couple of years ago, they played Cumbria. They resurrected Cumbria, didn't they, and played it in front of like 5,500 at Whitehaven as a memorial for Gary Purdon.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
yeah.
That was so well supported, and you know, just on a separate point, the county of Cumbria seems to be coming good in the amateur game because they'll have three teams in the National Conference League Premier Division next year. So things are obviously getting better.
But again,
are they
part time? You know, is it going to be the same as France? Again, is it going to be the same situation? No offence to obviously Cumbria, but you know, could they put a team out of Super League quality? well, or better than Super League quality.
Half of Leeds' youngsters have been signed from Cumbria.
There you go.
Warrington usually snatch a couple as well.
Oh yeah, we've been known to in the past.
I'm just thinking, who was it? You know, there's been a few, hasn't there, down the years at Warrington?
Chambo was one, wasn't he?
Yeah, there's John Roper was one. You know, so there's been precedents set before. Yeah. I'm sure there's been precedents set before. Okay. You know, anyway, let's have some more reaction, shall we? We've heard from Richard Aker. Let's hear from Steve Manning chatting to Steve McNamara, meeting of the two Steves here.
The England coach, job done, and job done emphatically, a record win over France.
Yeah, he's, you know, really pleased. Very professional performance. I think when you get one-sided scorelines and the game starts to clearly go one way, then your team can get sloppy and loose, and we never did that. We kept our foot on and kept playing as well as we could against the opposition that were in front of us.
You got that initial cluster, and then there was a little bit of a gap sort of thing before half-time. Yep. And then in the second half, that cluster became a procession.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I thought we started the game extremely well. We were well connected with each other. Our combinations were really, really good. We're looking pretty slick and fluent, and we had a little dip at the end of the first half, but it was good to see you do some defence and work out defensively throughout that period, learn some lessons throughout that period, and then obviously the start of the second half we just blew them away.
I suppose only slight negative, and you'll be a taskmaster, the conceding of that try.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole aim of today was to come out and defend well, not score loads of points, but it was to defend really well and very strongly, and We probably did that. There is some areas there that we do need to improve on. But yeah, we got beat with a kick, a ricocheted kick, and I think it's a lesson for everybody involved. You know, if you stop moving on a player, regardless of the circumstance, whether a kick ricochets and bounces anyway, you just need to have more bodies in the frame than the opposition. We never did that, and we paid the price and conceded 4 points.
And a couple of points you mentioned, first of all, injury free, and the 17 are going to give you problems as well with the 7 that did manage to get into the 17.
Yeah, we've got a great group of players who didn't play today. 7 high quality players who were all ready to play. Today was a very good performance from ourselves, but it's my job to assess that, look at the Kiwis, work out whether it should be that 17 or whether there's actually people within the other group who could come in and improve that and give us a better chance of winning next week. So it's all part of the job, and look forward to working through that this week.
Just touching before my final question, they didn't look bad at all in that last 20 minutes, the New Zealanders last night, did they?
No, they looked very good. They looked like they just got off a plane, you know, in the first 20 minutes, and which they had done, got overcoming jet lag and everything else, and then they found the rhythm. Once they found the rhythm, they showed how dangerous they can be, and you know, threats through the middle in particular, with Jesse Bromwich up front, Isaac Luke and Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, and plenty of power and abundance around that. So great challenge for us ahead, great challenge for them as well. We've got two really good teams playing against each other next week, and it's going to be in front of a full house, hopefully in Hull, and we'll be ready.
Keep in touch via Twitter. Just follow at Radio General WHR.
Your Feel Better station.
Radio General.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Yes, welcome back to the Final Hooter here on Radio General and, of course, loverugbyleague.com. I'm Dave Parkinson. I'm joined by Dave Birch, and we were just talking because the next segment of the show, we're going back in time.
It's going to be like Back to the Future again.
It is,
but even further back.
But we're going even further back. Although, to be fair, we're only going back a year further. We're looking at 1984, or George Orwell's year.
Did he play prop for Salford?
He's probably been sat by Marwan Kukash, hasn't he?
Oh, right.
Everybody else has that's got into Salford. Sorry, Marwan, if you're listening.
Sorry, Marwan.
I'll have nothing bad said against you, mate. I think you're doing a top
job. You can feel free to come in any week.
Yeah, we'd love to have him, actually, on the podcast, or even coming in, cheering up our patients at Warrington Hospital. I'm sure he'd love to get around asking for a few requests, wouldn't he?
You never know.
It's 1984.
It is.
It's October 1984. And Dave Birch, what's happening?
Well, I'll tell you what, the big news was at Widnes, where Kurt Sorensen.
Oh, just wait till I tell Adrian. Right,
Kurt Sorensen. Time for Widnes to be gutted he's missed out on this one. Yeah. Although, at the same time as Kurt was coming in, Andy Gregory was putting in a transfer request and wanting to leave.
And of course, he ended up at Warrington, didn't he?
He did, but in October they refused it. They said no. Although Wigan did put in a little cheeky bid by trying to drop a player in there as well. They offered Gary Stevens as well.
Oh yes, he was a halfback for Wigan at the time. Wasn't
he was. It? So they offered him for £12,000 as well, but you know, witness for having none of it at the time. But of course, we all know Andy Gregory did end up at Wigan and was a very successful player there. Great Britain, of course, remember them. Great Britain. Used to have a rugby team years ago.
They used to play regular tests.
Yeah, well, they were.
Went on regular tours as well.
They did. Well, they were after a new coach, and they got a six-man list of the coaches they wanted. Probably couldn't put six coaches together now, could you, if you wanted to put a New England manager?
I don't think anybody wants it. I think that's how Steve McNamara ended up with it, yeah, by default.
Probably, yeah. So there's Alan Agar, of course. The father of Richard.
Father of Richard, we're not just making it up on this show. It
is. Roger Millward.
Roger Millward. Yeah. He was a fantastic player back in the day, wasn't he?
He was. He was a good coach.
That's what my dad said, anyway. Oh, right, yeah. I never seen him.
No, I didn't either. Peter Fox.
Peter Fox, the wily Peter Fox. I think he's just been given a Hall of Fame spot at Bradford.
Oh, yeah, very well deserved. Arthur Bunting. He was a poor man I've never heard of.
Arthur Bunting. I've heard he's one of those names that he's sort of vaguely, he's on the tip of the tongue. And I don't really know much about him other than that.
No, sorry, Arthur, if you're listening. Arthur, yeah. Again, you're welcome to come in and tell us all about your career. And finally, the man who got the job in the end. Can you remember who that was?
I feel like I've got the countdown clock going on in my head.
Have I mentioned Mal Reilly as well?
No, did he get it?
No, he didn't get it.
He was the coach at one point, wasn't he?
He was, but he didn't get it this time. It was Maurice Bamford.
Maurice Bamford. I tell you what, he had an interesting coaching career. And in fact, up until a couple of years ago, I used to chat to him regularly when I went to Batley and Dewsbury.
Oh, right.
Because he used to do the match reports for the League Weekly.
Excellent. So you're name dropping there, Parky.
If I can't just name drop one or two, I've shared a commentary box with Maurice Bamford.
Excellent. Well, there was big fines dished out as well. There was a big fine for Halifax and Workington. Halifax were fined £100.
Blimey.
And Workington £50 for brawling.
Brawling.
Yes.
Hey, I tell you what, your average Super League fine there is £300.
Oh, that's just not gone up much then.
It's not gone up that much, has it?
You probably don't get as much brawling as you did in 1984 as well. And of course, the big thing I thought was great about October 1984 was the County Cups, obviously, were going on then as well. And over the Pennines, we'll go first. We'll go to Hull, because at Hull City's ground, Boothbury Park, or Hull City's former ground, Hull FC beat Hull Kingston Rovers in a big Hull derby.
Really?
29 points to 12. Two tries for Gary Kemble.
Yeah.
Try for Lee Crooks as well.
Yeah.
And four goals and a drop goal for a certain fella called Gary Schofield.
Now, he had a really prolific season. Looking up, I was having a quick gander because I thought, he's going to mention Gary Schofield somewhere along the way.
We have to, don't you, in those days?
You know, I mean, fantastic player than what he was. And he was right at the start of his professional rugby league days in that time, wasn't he? I think he only turned pro in 83. Mm. But he was really prolific that year. I think he was 23 tries that he scored. He kicked over 100 goals for Hull, which, you know, seems a bit strange. He was thinking that Lee Crooks would have been the guy that would have been
the goal. Yeah, that's the thing I was very surprised
about. Later times.
Yeah, of course, Lee Crooks was a great goal kicker as well. And just great to see some of the names that they beat on their road to winning the cup. They beat Halifax in the first round, 30 points to 10 at home, at the Boulevard, of course. They then went to York and beat them 38 points to 8. And then they were back at home again for the semi-final where they beat Leeds, the Loiners, of course, in those days.
No rhinos. No rhinos here.
There was no rhinos. 24 points to 1. That's which is an amazing scoreline.
That's an odd scoreline. That's like going to the bookies and, you know, them giving you odds, isn't it?
That's Leeds thinking it was going to be close and it wasn't.
You can imagine it, can't you? Leeds going front 1-0. Oh, I tell you what, we're on for a win here, lads.
I still remember an 84 points to 1. Well, that involved York as well. Warrington beating York in a Challenge Cup match. But Warrington scored about 30-odd points by then and York just went, we're not going to get nilled, so they just dropped a goal.
Well, it's funny that you mention that because I have a similar sort of tale also involving York, strangely.
What's going on with York?
At Lee. Right. And it was a game where the great Tim Street.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, remember him well. I know we're 84, so we're even before Timmy here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, but he scored two tries and kicked four goals. And I think York dropped a goal right near the end. They lost 84-1 in that one as well.
I tell you, it must be a thing with Yorkshire people. They don't like getting nailed in Yorkshire.
They don't like getting nailed.
Now, the big news, of course, on this side of the Pennines was the Lancashire Cup final was due to be played at Wilderspool.
Oh, right, yeah.
It was between Wigan and St Helens, and they decided that they didn't want to play Wilderspool.
Why not?
I don't know.
You always told me that it was a great place, a great venue to enjoy rugby league.
Well, it was, but not a great place. Not a great place for visiting fans, but I think it was probably due to the size of the game, really.
I always thought it was a zoo, to be honest. Yeah. I remember being on that railway embankment end, you know, and you was all hemmed in there, to be honest.
Yeah, I think
shoehorned in.
It's probably more to do with the size of the ground rather than sort of the where it was. But they had a toss of a coin to decide where they were going to play the game, which they don't do anymore, do they? They don't toss coins for venues and things like that. So the winner of the coin toss in 1984 was Wigan. They played the final at Central Park. But sadly for Wigan, they lost 26 points to 18 to the Saints.
Take that smirk off your face, Dave Birch.
And, one of the players on that losing side that day was Wigan's current coach, Sean Wayne. Which makes it even easier. I'm trying not to laugh at
you
now.
Yeah, you was. I thought you was doing really well up until that point.
Now, of course, St Helens, that season, 84, they just signed two big-name Aussies, so Mal Meninga and Phil Vivas.
Well, to be honest, nobody had really heard of Vivas, had they?
No.
You know, he was the lesser heralded of them.
And still here, though, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's the one that's never gone home.
He's Workington Town coach, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, doing a really good job up in Cumbria, to be honest. And he's seems to be signing up ex-Widnes players because they're releasing him like confetti at the moment.
They certainly are, yeah. Surprised about the Jack Owens one. But
Very surprised.
On their run to the final, got some big names here that St Helens played on their way. They started off with a 58 points to 14 win at home to Runcorn Highfield.
Hang on, I thought you said big names. I mean, it's plenty letters.
No, it's long, isn't it?
Yeah, it's plenty letters. Yeah,
that's what I mean. Second, they had to go to Barrow, and they won that one 26 points to 10.
Always like that trip.
Yeah, and then they played some team called Lee in the semi-finals, beating them 31-10.
That wasn't a big team.
Well, Lee had knocked out Warrington, that's why I've got a bit of a face on me with that one, in the first round that year as well.
Oh, we'll see. It weren't a bad year after all, was
bad
it?
Bad referee.
It was also the year of the miners' strike as well, wasn't it? 84, 85 into that, so yeah, I can imagine that.
And some big film names as well, of course, with Halloween this weekend. Ghostbusters was released, wasn't it? Ghostbusters?
It was in 84. Gremlins was out in 1984 as well, and a certain film by James Cameron, The Terminator.
I'd be back, and he's been back a lot of times, hasn't he?
He's been back more times than Adrian Morley, who just won't retire.
He is. Arnold Morley.
In the charts at the time, the top five songs in the UK were Stevie Wonder at number one, I Just Called to Say I Love You. I couldn't find that.
Couldn't you find that one?
It is on the radio.
Do you not want me to sing it?
But no, okay. You're okay. Right, okay. You're okay.
I'll just do the...
Everybody'll just switch off at this stage if we start
singing. I would have thought so.
Number two was Wham and Freedom, which we did play, and which listeners to the podcast won't hear at all.
No shame.
Oh dear. The Culture Club were number three with The War Song. Paul McCartney was at four with No More Lonely Nights, and Ray Parker Jr. with Ghostbusters.
There you go. See, I called that one. There
amazing. It was an amazing song, that. Loved it as a kid.
Another song I remember from 1984 was 909 Luftballon, also known as 99 Red Balloons.
Oh, by, Naina. Naina. Yeah. You often play that one, don't you?
I play it every week, yeah.
The German version. You just love it.
I'm stuck in 1984, what can I say?
I think we all are. That's what it felt like driving here tonight. It's that extra hour, tell you what. Ooh.
Well, it is. It's dark now, isn't it? When you turn up at the studio, it's dark now.
I hope that you've enjoyed us looking back at what was happening around about this sort of time. I'm going to make this a regular feature. I'm going to shoehorn it in and tell Mr. Jackson that we want more nostalgia.
Bit of history.
But I best go and put these Betamax tapes away. They're doing me nutty now. Anyway, you're listening to this as we're in the closing stages of the show.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Tell you what, Dave, I'm going to stay away from these keys because I nearly switched us off then.
No, yeah.
That would have been dreadful, wouldn't it? This is, of course, the final hooter. It would have been quiet. Yeah, maybe our listeners would have enjoyed the last 5 minutes of no discussion. But that's not the way that we like to end things here on the final hooter. We hope you've enjoyed the show thus far. And, we've got the little matter of a test series between England and New Zealand coming up over the next 3 weekends. You've already pinned your colours firmly to the mast, Dave Birch. You've said that England are going to win the series. Are you going for a 3-0 whitewash, just so as we know what to not bet against?
Yeah, because my betting's awful, so if anyone is listening, just back against anything that I say. You know what? I think they'll win at the weekend. I think they'll win in Hull.
Yeah.
I think they'll win at Wigan.
Yeah.
I think maybe, possibly, the London trip may be the one that may stumble.
Oh, you know what?
Only because big stadium is going to be different sort of atmosphere, although there obviously will be a lot of England fans there. And I just think maybe that'll be the one that they could slip up on. So I'm going to go 2-1.
Are you doing that because they play at London in the second game, don't they?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That'd level it up. So that'd ensure a sellout at Wigan, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would do, you know, and that'd be a good one. So, yeah, I'm going to go 2-1. But I think they'll win quite comfortably at Wigan. There you go.
Now, we've heard from Steve Manning throughout the show as he's gone out intrepidly sticking his microphone under various coaches and personalities' mouths and getting them to talk. Well, here he is catching up with joint skipper of New Zealand, Adam Blair, for his thoughts on the test series that's forthcoming.
Well, co-captain Adam Blair, your thoughts on this forthcoming three test series against England?
Oh, it's obviously going to be really tough. I guess there's a great rivalry between the two nations where, you know, they always seem to bring the best out of both of each other. So I'm really looking forward to it. I know it's going to be tough, but it's exciting for us as a group, and I'm guessing the English boys are really pumped for it as well.
Obviously, we have a game over here. Have you managed to see any Super League in what time you have?
Not really. Briefly seen a few games, but, you know, it's, I guess it's over here. It's a great game over here, and they support it really well. And there's some great players getting around. And I've seen the English boys here today, and there's some great players here as well.
And some of the guys obviously are playing in the NRL, so they'll know about you, and you know about them.
Yeah, I guess I see Tom Burgess and Sam Tonkin. So, you know, those guys are great players in the NRL, and they get the opportunity to come over here and, you know, play against us. So it's going to be tough, and it's obviously going to be a really competitive game.
Just fine. I think they go to the press conference. So very quickly, what about the coach? He's been there, done it, read the book as a player and as a coach.
He's been outstanding for New Zealand Rugby League for the last 18 months and done some great things for us. And he's, you know, pointing us in the right direction, built a great culture here for New Zealand Rugby League, and he keeps developing every year. So, you know, a great opportunity for Stephen.
So Steve Kearney, he was very fulsome of praise there, was Adam Blair, as you'd expect, as he's the skipper of the side. So he's not going to criticise his coach, is he? But he's done a good job there, hasn't he?
Well, he has, and of course, you know, he's had some very big wins in his time as New Zealand coach as well. So, you know, he thoroughly deserves that. And, you know, maybe his coaching could be the thing that outdoes England.
Now, we've just got enough time to squeeze in a few words, I should say, from the big fella himself. This is Steve Manning chatting to the Kiwi coach, Steve Kearney.
Well, Steve Kearney, the head coach of New Zealand, the first test beckons a week on Sunday at your old stomping ground, Hull.
It does, and you know, we have a clear understanding, you know, the challenge that we have, you know, have ahead of us, and you know, certainly, you know, with the English team that's been selected, it's, you know, for me, it's one of the, you know, one of the best sides that I've seen selected over the last, you know, couple of years. I thought, you know, they were very unlucky in the, you know, 2014 Four Nations tournament, not to finish higher. I thought they should have won the game in Melbourne against Australia, and I thought it was you know, a toss of the coin against, you know, ourselves and Dunedin when we, you know, we played a, you know, fantastic match. So you know what I'm saying is I think, or even if you take yourself back to 2013, you know,
I wasn't going to mention it, but I'm glad you did. You say,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, and we, you know, I feel, you know, we were certainly fortunate, you know, to come up with a play, you know, with a minute or so to go in the semi-final. You know, so my point is that, you know, I think the English side has been, you know, been tracking along, you know, very, very well over the last couple of years without a great deal of you know, luck or success. So, you know, for us, you know, understanding, you know, the challenge ahead of us, you know, we know what's coming, and, you know, I know if we turn up and take our best performance, you know, to the stadium, that, you know, we give ourselves a great opportunity. But like I said, that's not disregarding, you know, what England bring.
And from your own point of view also, I don't know if it's added pressure or not added pressure, the fact that you're the number one side, given your performances over the last few years, and especially against Australia from the other side of the sea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's certainly, you know, we don't see it as, you know, for sure. I mean, you know, I feel that we've, you know, got ourselves into a position, you know, where we've, I guess, earned that. And, you know, so from that perspective, again, it just comes back to, you know, us turning up to the stadium, you know, and taking our best performance. And, you know, we feel if we prepare well enough and we do that, then, you know, we give ourselves a great chance. So, you know, that's certainly what our focus is.
Across Warrington Hospital.
With a bigger variety of music.
This is your Feel Better station.
Radio General.